Hello there, listeners of the Byelines Network podcast. Welcome to our by-election special. We're only a couple of weeks late. Please forgive us. In this episode, we are going to be talking about the results of the recent by-elections that happened just over 10 days ago. Chris will be talking about Selby. I'll be talking about Somersham and Frome. And then we'll be talking about the near miss that was Uxbridge. So, Chris, Labour won, a rare Labour W, as it were.
Well, I mean, slightly almost skipping ahead, the night went an interesting way. There were certainly some twists and turns, but Selby and Ainsdie was definitely one that Labour was expecting to win. And this was because the incumbent Conservative MP decided to throw a hissy fit because he didn't get given an honour to go into the House of Lords. Because, you know, that's something that everybody seems to have a problem with these days. That's certainly something that the common man deals with. You know, Nadine Dorries, by the way, I don't think she has resigned yet.
Not yet. Even though she has said that she absolutely will, because, again, she's throwing a hissy fit over not getting a ladyship. She has yet to hand in her resignation, meaning that the people of Mid-Bedfordshire haven't had proper representation in the Houses of Parliament for over a year now.
And I think, well, that by-election will be interesting. But going back to Selby, and if it's any, if you can take any reflections on what happened in Mid-Bedfordshire from this, Labour, they overturned a majority of over 20,000, which I believe is the largest majority overturned in any by-election ever, which is quite impressive. They've also managed to elect the youngest sitting MP in this parliament. So it's Keir Mather, and he's 25 years old. You have had the inevitable criticism of he's too young to be in politics. He doesn't know what he's doing. Instead of actually being generally critical of any policies, it's just been about age. He won it. He's now the MP for Selby and Ainsdie, or will be when he returns to Parliament in September. Looking at the stats for this, the most interesting part was the Tory vote just collapsed there. And that looks to be just because they didn't show up. So turnout there was down 30% from 2019, but it is a by-election. So they are historically lower than general elections. But compared to the last election, where 56,000 people voted, only 33,000 voted this time. So out of those votes, 21,000 were Conservatives that were missing. So do you
think this is a case of the Conservative voters in Selby going, I'm never going to vote Labour, but I'm never going to vote Conservative whilst this lot are in charge?
Yeah, and looking at sort of the local news reports and the interviews that have been done with people who live there, a lot of the reasons why either they weren't voting or they were voting for Labour was because of an increase in interest rates, and then that passes on through to mortgage rates. So people are just being hit right in the pocket in terms of their mortgage. And this was one of like the top, I think top sort of 40 seats maybe, where people are seeing the highest increases in their mortgages. I think I saw that. So it's an area that's more affected seemingly than others in terms of people's mortgage repayments. And, you know, nothing swings people's political vote like an issue with the mortgage. And we've seen that historically. But if you take the swing here, then in theory, at the next election, you'd see a Labour majority. But as we will soon find out, this wasn't really replicated everywhere.
No, but one constituency at a time. Yeah, I'm going to be talking about Somersham and Frome. Now, Somersham and Frome is in the West Country. And the thing about the West Country is that outside of Bristol, Labour don't really have that much of a shot winning anywhere, to be perfectly frank. I remember when I interviewed a local councillor at the 2019 local elections, he said he was Labour, obviously. And he said that coming third was actually a good result in Oxfordshire for Labour. So in this part of the country, it's very much a two-horse race between yellow or blue. And I feel like this was fairly reflected in the results. So the majority was 19,213 for Dave Warburton. Now, in case anybody wants to know, oh, why does that name sound familiar? He was one of the few MPs who had the whip withdrawn from him by his party, sexually harassing some of his colleagues, which is just a big no-no, quite frankly. Like, a couple of months later, he just said, no, I'm resigning, saying he was being harassed by the watchdog.
Oh, no, you were being held to account for actions.
He formally resigned, and the by-election happened. And as I said, in this part of the country, it's basically just a two-horse race between the Liberals and the Conservatives. So, surprise, surprise, the Liberals overturned the majority. It was a 29% swing from the Conservatives to the Liberal Democrats. And Labour came fifth to prove my point. Encouraging sign for the Green Party, though. They did get a 5% increase from the last general election and came third. So I don't know how they'll see that result at the headquarters, where the headquarters are. Sarah Dyke won by 54% of the votes. And as I said, that's a 29% swing with a majority of 11,000. Yeah, so it's a little bit shaky. It would not surprise me if that was like an even tighter one at the next general election. Because as I said, this, as you pointed out, this is a by-election. Not a lot of people come out for by-elections, as reflected in the fact that there was a 31% decrease in the turnout at 44.
That's quite a significant drop.
Like I said, by-election. But yeah, so Somerton Froome is now represented by a Liberal Democrat. For the first time in a while, which seems to be a recurring theme for these former Conservative places. You got like half of Hertfordshire, and now you've got this.
And I wonder if there was any tactical voting involved, but wherever the Lib Dems are, I would assume there is.
Quite frankly, it would not surprise me if both were true. Like, there was some kind of tactical voting added on the fact that the Liberal Democrats are the only real force against the Conservatives in this part of the country. Because in most of the constituencies anyway, for the most part, the Liberal Democrats are the only major candidate. But yeah, I do also fear that part of the reason why the Liberal Democrats almost don't always like get their win their constituencies is because Labour and the Liberal Democrats are kind of like splitting the left votes, as it were. I did read an article saying that there was some tactical voting going on in Somerton and Froome, which probably explains why there was a 10% decrease in votes for Labour. But yeah, so that was Somerton and Froome. Now we get on to the real meat and potatoes.
Yes, Uxbridge and Southbridge. Obviously held by our former Prime Minister and disgraced former Prime Minister, I should say. This was a twisty, turny, topsy-turvy night. And I made this silly decision to stay and watch the coverage because that's the kind of person I am.
I had work in the morning.
So did I, but I decided to call it a day at 2:30 because I had stuff to do in the morning. But so in Uxbridge and South Ruislip, the Conservatives won. But it was a very slim majority, and it was a majority of less than 500, so 495 votes. Their majority here has been significantly reduced. I think the swing was about 7%. See, now in the last, the days following the loss, there has been a lot of talk about something called the ultra low emission zone. And for anyone who's not from London, you may not have heard of it before. And if you haven't, you're very lucky. But it's shortened to you, Les, the ultra low emission zone is something that's about to be expanded. So it already exists within the inner boundaries of London. So I believe it's to currently the North and the South Circular. At the end of August, it's going to be extended to not quite the M25, but basically to the outer boroughs. So it'll encompass a majority of London.
And there's like a couple of neighborhoods on like the fringes of Greater London, but for all intents and purposes, it's covering the entire county of Greater London.
Yeah. And there's big conversation about this was a very anti-ULEZ vote, and that's why Labour lost the seat. And it's funny because you look at sort of the political discourse around ULEZ and you get the odd sort of article about how people are very unhappy that they can't drive their big old Range Rovers anymore. But it's been mentioned in, I think, 300 more articles in the last sort of 10 days than it has been in the last year or so. So long story short, a lot of the coverage post the Uxbridge and Ruislip by-election was basically Labour lost this because of ULEZ. And there was this sort of really uncomfortable conversation that you saw develop internally within the Labour Party after this. Basically, what happened when those members of the Shadow Cabinet go and do the media rounds the next day, it was basically throwing Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, under a bus. You know, it was saying this policy is not well thought out, it's not popular, we need to listen to people. And, you know, if you've been paying attention to the news in the last couple of days, you would have seen that the High Court has actually ruled that the ultra low emission zone is fine and it can go ahead and there's no overreach from the Mayor of London's office at all. And it's well within his remit. And there's been a complete failure to acknowledge that this policy actually was started by the former Prime Minister, who happened to hold the seat of Uxbridge and South Ruislip when he was Mayor of London. This was introduced under him. It's also partly a duty placed on devolved administrations and local authorities to tackle air pollution. So this is a necessary policy that was sort of passed on from the government. And it almost seems like it was sort of a trap that was laid. But the fact that Labour has just sort of, I don't want to say rolled over, but they've sort of failed to take a principled stand on this, which I don't think helped them. Especially considering the policy is actually quite popular in London as a whole. Most people support it. Most people agree that air pollution is a big problem. You know, you can't really argue with the figures. You know, hundreds of children have breathing difficulties, like things like asthma, and people die from air pollution. And the fact that you have this very vocal minority moaning about paying for, oh, I have to pay to drive my car to the shops. Well, maybe get a bus or, you know, cycle.
I have seen this before though with a couple of other similar policies existing in Oxford and indeed in Bristol. You know, Bristol has a clean air zone, big quotation marks around clean air zone, where they basically drawn a circle or basically around like the city center and said, okay, no cars built before 1997, I think it was, are allowed to drive through here. With some minor exceptions, you know, people living in that area, for ambulances, for lorry drivers, well, for delivery drivers anyway, and for people who run small businesses in here. So, and the council estimated that it wasn't going to affect like 77% of cars or something in Bristol wouldn't be affected because cars are just better made after 1997. You still have people complaining about like, oh, I can't drive my car in here. And then you just hear, it was made in 2006. It's just like, oh, crying. And then Oxford tried to create a very similar policy, you know, a clean air zone around like the city center. And then there was just like this massive movement against it. And people started saying, oh, they're going to use this as an example to control people's movements within the city.
Right.
Because they got the clean air zone muddled up with some other laws that Oxford were making to make the city a 15-minute city.
So that's just a completely other story.
Yeah, it's when I looked into it, it was basically a group from the American right.
Yes.
Essentially creating fear-mongering rumors and saying that they're trying to control you. And it's just like, no, they're not.
We just don't want children to die from, you know, breathing diseases or lung diseases or from air pollution. We just don't want children to die because they want to play in the park and they want to breathe clean air. Pretty straightforward. And I mean, back sort of to ULEZ in London, I mean, the compared to the figures in Bristol, the analysis put out is that only 10% of cars will be affected by the expansion. So it's not that significant. And the main point I'm trying to make is that it was extremely uncomfortable for me as a Labour member to see, you know, the leadership completely sort of leave Sadiq Khan out to dry on a policy that is actually necessary. And I think voters, one, maybe ULEZ was a factor in Labour losing in that election there. But the other thing that I think will have had an impact is the lack of principle that the candidate and the party showed on that policy in this campaign. There was no talk about it until about halfway through, where the candidate said, "Nope, I don't think this is right. It needs to be rethought." Historically, voters don't like their politicians changing their opinions at the very last minute. And I mean, the cynic in me says he only really did that because he wanted to win the seat. And unfortunately, that didn't work. And, you know, you look at how Rishi Sunak in the last week has said he wants to ban councils from, what was it, implementing 20 mile an hour speed limits in their areas.
He's effectively gutting efforts. He's effectively gutting efforts to, A, make neighbourhoods safer, and B, make neighbourhoods cleaner, air-wise, anyway.
And it's just this whole, the whole conversation post this by-election specifically in Uxbridge has been the voters have no appetite for green policy, which is, to be frank, absolute crap. And it comes at the worst time, when you see that the planet has had the hottest July on record. You know, Greek islands are going up in smoke, Canada's going up in smoke. And at the same time, we have both politicians in the government, governing party, and the opposition saying, oh, we need to rethink these policies, you know, they might not be the best thing. If Labour stands for anything at the next election, it should be on radical change, and they need to have a message on climate change and emissions, because the planet is burning and there's no time to be on the fence. And that's what they've done straight. That's the takeaway they've taken from losing in Uxbridge. This isn't necessarily a seat they would win anyway, by the way. You know, it's been historically conservative and has been, I think they only returned one Labour MP, and that was in like 1959. So the response has just been totally disproportionate to the actual issue the policy is trying to solve itself, and sort of the climate emergency we're all facing. And it's so depressing. It's really, really depressing. And I mean, specifically, sort of in relation to the Labour Party in Uxbridge, a lot of local members are very unhappy with how the candidate was selected, because usually the constituency Labour Party, so local members have a say in who their candidate is and they get to vote on it. In this election, or this by-election, Labour Central Office essentially disbanded the committee of people who were due to select the candidate, and then said, this is the person that we want to choose. And it was suspected that that was done because he wasn't likely to win amongst local members, because he wasn't from the area recently anyway. And that may well also have had something to do with it. Labour may well have done better if they had a local candidate. The Tories candidate was a local councillor. So that may also have been a factor, but I really don't think it was as much to do with ULEZ as people make out. And that's the main point that's the point I'm taking away from this anyway.
Well, I mean, I completely agree. I don't think ULEZ is as unpopular as people make it out to be. It's just that, unfortunately, the people that really hate it get a lot of airtime, quite frankly, because people see that as the controversial opinion.
Yeah, and it's really sad because, you know, out of all of the issues that people are facing at the moment with, you know, the cost of their mortgages, the price of rent, the cost of living in general, and the focus here was on a policy that actually is very popular and very needed. And there was sort of not much more substance to the conversation apart from that. And it just shows you, I think, what the Tories are going to do in the coming up in the several by-elections that you will probably see in the next few months. And then the general election, it won't be a campaign on policy. It won't be a campaign on meaningful things. It'll be a campaign on division. It'll be focusing on the stupid boats that they're placing asylum seekers on. It'll be about demonizing the trans community. It'll be that kind of thing, because they don't have anything else to say. And unfortunately, no,
and in case anybody thinks, oh, we're making that up, no, they've admitted that. A 30p Lee has literally said we're going to be fighting the next general election on immigrants and trans people.
Yeah.
So we're about to see a lot more transphobia in the media. Yay.
So I mean,
I'm so tired.
It's exhausting. And especially when, you know, I've said this already, when you can see that the planet is on fire, literally now, like in front of our eyes, and we're having stupid conversations about whether or not we want to cut emissions in London because, first of all, climate change, but second of all, kids are dying of breathing difficulties. Like, it's nonsensical, and it's incredibly frustrating, and it's very grim. But on a positive note,
enough about two guys ranting about politics, you know, like it's the unique feature on most podcasts. We'll now move swiftly on to what does this potentially mean for the next general election.
Well, the polling still shows that Labour has a lead, and that would indicate they would get a majority, and I think that would be the case. But it comes back to what I was saying before. Specifically, Uxbridge, it's not a seat that Labour really were expecting to win, and they haven't done.
Yeah, with the benefit of hindsight, it was very unlikely that they were ever going to win Uxbridge. Which, you know, is a shame, but the fact they've whittled it down to less than 500 is, you know, a really good result. You know, Rishi Sunak did come out after these by-elections and just went, oh, look, the Conservatives are not quite out yet. After they lost two-thirds of the by-elections happening. You know, quite frankly, if we end up in a world where two-thirds of the seats are won by left-leaning parties, I wonder if Rishi Sunak will be singing the same tune of the Conservatives are not out. Because, yeah, I mean, that result will end up with a coalition. But the main aim of the next general election is not for, you know, it's not for Labour to gain an outright majority in my eyes. It's for the Conservatives to be kicked out.
And I mean, we'll see. And with the sort of, there'll be a by-election at some point in Mid-Bedfordshire when Nadine decides to go. There'll probably be one in. But we are probably good. We've definitely got one in Scotland in Rutherglen and Hamilton. And that will be interesting because that will show whether Labour has any, this electorate in Scotland have any appetite for Labour anymore, especially after the sort of tumultuous time the SNP have had recently. And that'll be interesting too. We'll see what happens. But if we are going with takeaways from these three by-elections, it shows that, I mean, definitely there was tactical voting in, I think, basically more or less all of the seats. And you can see that in the way the votes transferred. That's probably going to be a big factor at the next election. And also, if the seats in the north go the same way as Selby and Ainsty, then we probably are going to look at a Labour majority.
Yeah. And, you know, I have my issues with the backtrackers that are the current Labour lot. But, I mean, quite frankly, I'm just so tired of, like, nothing working. Like, Britain is currently facing all these problems and all these issues, you know, cost of living crisis, global warming. We just have this massive rise of nastiness and people who think that they can say whatever they want without any consequences. Brexit, all that kind of stuff. It feels like we're screaming into the void and no one's listening. I want that feeling to end. And if that means that I will have to vote Labour at the next general election, which I probably don't have to because I live in Bristol, which is basically a Labour safe haven, then I will have to grit my teeth and I will do it because I want this feeling to end.
If the election comes in the next 12 months, hopefully we'll have that, but we'll just have to wait and see.
The earliest that they can call a general election is March 24, right? And the latest they can call it is January 25?
I think so. But I think that's
so,
right.
Yeah, I reckon we're in for a tough couple of months because Rishi Sunak, I think, in my personal opinion, will send out nastier and nastier policies that will get the far right of the Conservatives riled up and go, yes, this is what we want. This is good. And then when the general election comes, and if the Conservatives lose, depending on how much they lose by, they'll see anything they can cling onto as any kind of victory, I think.
Yeah, that was they were claiming victory in Uxbridge, but it wasn't an entire victory for them either. It was a significantly reduced majority. But to be fair, if you're a prime minister in the state that he is and the state his party's in, then, and when you look at the polls, you would cling on to any tiny sliver of hope that you have, even if it makes you look just completely and utterly delusional.
Yeah. And, the previous local elections that he tried to spin as some kind of victory. You know, the reason why he said, oh, we are expecting to lose 1,000 seats is because they were managing their expectations, as Ian Hislop said. And, you know, they lost nearly 1,100. And I believe some of the Conservatives came out and just went, oh, not as bad as we were expecting. It's like, was it though?
It is just managed decline at this point. That's what it is. And it's frustrating because, like we've talked about, there are an infinite amount of problems that people are facing that are genuinely impacting their lives in awful ways. And nothing is happening. And there needs to be some change. And you can be hopeful or cynical about whether Labour will bring that about or not. But ultimately, that's kind of the best chance we've got.
I choose to be cynical. I've seen too many backtracks, my dude. I'm sorry. I walked away from Labour for a reason.
That's totally fair enough, and I'm sure you're not alone in that decision either.
Long story short, good night for any left-leaning party. Not as good a night as Rishi Sunak says it was. There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Even if it's a very long way away.
Thank you very much for listening to us, listeners of the Bylines Network podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to our podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from. And please donate to our crowdfunder to help us achieve what the network wants to achieve. It'll be linked in the description of this podcast. Donate what you can. Any amount is extremely helpful. I've been Julian Greenbank of Bristol.
And I've been Chris in London.
This has been the Bylines Network podcast. It was hosted by Chris Davis and Julian Greenbank, with music by Kevin MacLeod. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we do hope that you'll join us next time. Thank you.